This thing dogged her heels. Though she pitied it, Uni was obviously, in its own words, unbalanced.
You can't go that way. Door is sealed. There's only one way, topside.
Hesitating, Mildred scanned Uni's face, looking for indications of deceit. It was a futile exercise.
Can you lead me out of this damn place?
You betcha. Follow me.
Mildred stepped forward, then paused and hefted her pistol.
Do you know what this is?
Sure.
Tell me.
A gun, right?
That's right. And I'm an expert with it. If you fuck with me, I'll blast your unbalanced metabolism into its component enzymes and amino acids.
Uni beckoned with long fingers.
Come on. Come on.
Grim-faced, Mildred followed Uni through the door into a room that was the exact opposite of the room she had seen above. It was filthy. Rusting pipes crisscrossed at all angles along the ceiling and walls. There was a cracked and dirt-filmed porcelain toilet affixed to a wall. The floor tiles were layered with ancient grease and layers of grime in the shape of treaded boot soles. A long row of dilapidated metal lockers lined one wall. A few of the doors gaped open, revealing rotting military uniforms hanging from hooks. The place had been abandoned a long time ago.
This way, this way.
Mildred followed the creature through what had been a lounge or common room. There were couches, candy and soft drink vending machines, and a television set. The screen was perforated by what looked like bullet holes.
Do you live here?
Sure, for a long time.
Alone?
Sure, all alone. When the program was terminated, a man in a white coat showed me the way down here. He wanted the program to go on. Said it had been stopped prematurely? Yes. He used to visit me here, examine me, bring me pills to eat. But then he went away one day and never came back.
How long ago was that?
I don't know. Long time. He said I needed something for my brain. Said I needed a new one or something. Said he would get it. He left to get it and never came back. I waited a long time and he never came back.
Well, how do you live down here? Where do you get food and water?
Plenty of food in little sealed packages. Lots of water in the drains.
They entered another room, this one very long and dimly lit, illuminated inadequately by overhead neon fixtures. It was a workshop, filled with heavy tables, tools, chain vices, bandsaws, and cumbersome drill presses. Mildred's eyes roved over the objects on one of the tables, and she came to a halt.
Wait, I need a minute.
Uni stopped, staring at her from about 10 feet away.
Stay there.
Why?
Because I have something to take care of and I don't need distractions.
I won't hurt you.
Is that a promise?
Very seriously, very gravely, Uni made the sign of the cross over its bony chest, then kissed the little finger of its right hand.
Pinky swear.
Removing the headset from her coat pocket, Mildred took a pair of needle-nosed pliers from the table and set to splicing the broken wires together. It was an in-close job, with bad lighting, rust-stiff tools, and a strained back to contend with. It required several minutes, several experimental attempts, and perseverance. Fortunately, Uni kept its promise and didn't move, allowing her to concentrate.
Yes! Ryan! Ryan, are you there? Damn it! All right, Uni. Lead on.
They left the workroom and entered a similar, slightly smaller one. Uni led the way toward propped open elevator doors. There was no car. The shaft rose above it. Paralleling the cables and running up one wall into the darkness was a metal ladder. Far above was a faint luminosity. Uni stepped onto the ladder and began to climb. Mildred snugged the ZKR into its holster and followed. They went up for more than 100 feet until they came to an opening. The elevator doors jammed to one side by a length of pipe.
Come on!
The air was colder here. The walls and floors were sheathed with alloy. Beyond the shaft were three entrances to corridors. One stretched straight ahead, and the other two branched to the left and right. Uni moved down the central corridor. It was neon lit and took several sharp turns and twists, like a maze. After several minutes, the corridor terminated in a large circular hatchway, rimmed by several concentric collars of dark metal. Uni waved a hand in front of it. Ryan could only judge the direction of the small elevator by the rising and falling sensation in the pit of his stomach. First it descended, then smoothly switched to travel along a horizontal plane. Doug maintained a smug smile throughout, as if he expected Ryan to be impressed to the point of awe.
Don't try anything, Cawdor.
Doug touched his mastoid bone behind his right ear, then a spot on the base of his throat.
I'm wired for sound. Got a communic implanted in me. Mess with me and I'll have an armed squad waiting to blow your head off.
Why did you let something like that be sewn up inside of you?
So I can be contacted when the commander needs me. Why else?
Yeah, right. Why else?
The door slid open on yet another stretch of alloy-paneled corridor. The commander was there to meet them. He greeted Ryan with a bleak smile that didn't indicate friendliness. Ryan looked at the man's gray eyes and thought again of ice. There was no malice in them, but nothing else either. The commander had gone beyond emotions. Either they were frozen out of him, or he had never had them. There was no human warmth about him, probably not even in his blood. In the brighter light of the corridor, Ryan saw faint pink lines on the smooth-skinned face that looked like old surgical scars.
Continue the search for Mr. Cawdor's companion, Doug. She somehow escaped the city. Your identification badge was found attached to a firearm. A check on the model, make, and serial number showed it was one traded to Hellscale over a year ago. So far, the woman has misled the search teams. They're very annoyed about it. So go and take charge of the operation.
Sir, I shouldn't leave you alone with this renegade.
The commander draped a paternal arm around Ryan's shoulders. The arm felt like a beam of steel.
Nonsense. We're going to have a talk, that's all. And your presence will inhibit our discussions. Be off with you now.
Doug scowled, then turned toward the elevator as the commander led Ryan down the corridor.
Do you know who I am?
The commander.
Short for Commander-in-Chief, a euphemism for President.
President of what?
This, the United States. You went through Washington and visited me in the Oval Office, didn't you?
Ryan knew a bit about pre-dark history, and this man didn't resemble pictures he had seen of the presidents whose terms preceded the new cost.
Didn't you?
Yeah. When were you elected?
I wasn't elected. It was an office I assumed after the chain of command had been broken. This complex became the seat of government. It wasn't easy making this place the nerve center of the country, but careful design, meticulous attention to detail, and good sound American craftsmanship paid off.
How large is the complex?
The tunnels run all through the mountain, leading down beneath it. We have 15 levels above ground. I have lived here for many years. I still find it inspiring.
An installation this size must require a lot of care, a lot of maintenance to keep it in operating condition.
Oh, quite. The problems are many, and we devote a great deal of time to repair and improvement. But the topic is far too technical to go into now.
Why did you retreat here in the first place?
I did not retreat, young man, and my reasons aren't open for discussion at present.
The commander turned toward a doorway, still leading Ryan. The room was very large, alloy-plated, and obviously a laboratory. It was staffed by men wearing white smocks, reading clipboards, checking gauges and thermometers. Inside glass cases and fluid-filled jars were human internal organs, floating livers, pumping hearts, eyeballs, loops of intestines, and in one large cubicle was the naked body of a man. A metal framework extended from where the right arm should have been. Ryan was both repulsed and fascinated. In glass-paneled cabinets were arms and legs, hands and feet and torsos, wires extending from the blood-rimmed stumps of necks, arms, and thighs.
Before your trade agreement with Hellscale, how did you acquire the organs and body parts you needed?
We managed to stockpile quite a number, primarily from personnel in non-essential positions. Spouses and children of staff members provided us with what we needed, at least for several decades. We began to deplete our supply over the last few years.
Was it worth it, just so you could exist in this frozen prison?
Hardly a prison, Mr. Cawdor. This installation is my gift to the country of my birth. It is devoted to bestowing order upon chaos.